2 Chronicles chapter 5. I want to focus on verse 13. Then the house was filled with a cloud. This was the cloud of God's glory, so that the priests couldn't stand a minister by reason of the cloud, for the glory of Yahweh filled God's house. Quite clearly, the temple was being accepted by God as the tabernacle, because the cloud of glory likewise dwelt within that tabernacle. And yet, God actually said right at the start of all this, I don't want a temple. I don't live in houses made with hands. I want to build you a house. I've never asked for a temple because I don't want one. I'm actually far happier being on the move all the time. And yet, of course, they wanted this. They wanted to be like the nations. They wanted the external form rather than the content. Rather like they wanted a human king. And God says, okay, I'll give you a king. He gave them Saul. Let's give due weight to that, that God gave them Saul. He said in Hosea, I gave you a king in my anger and took him away in my wrath. So they wanted a king. Okay, he says, you're rejecting me. That's what you want. I'll give it to you. Like the father giving the inheritance to the prodigal son. And yet it was not at all what he wanted, but he worked through it. In a sense, you could conclude that God so thirsts for relationship with human beings that even if they take a far lower level, he still works with them. And so it is here that, okay, this temple was not what he wanted, and it was built by David and Solomon, designed by David, built by Solomon, in a way that I think was not at all God's ideal intention, full of lily work or lotus work, just as the Egyptian temples were covered in the motif of lotus plants. It was very human, as it were. And yet God still went along with it. I mean, the whole thing was built on the assumption that there had to be a huge number of sacrifices offered. And God had told David, and David understood this in what he wrote in Psalm 40, that God doesn't want sacrifice. He doesn't want thousands of sacrifices. He wants broken and contrite hearts. And David in his later life had lost sight of how small he had come down before God over the issue of Bathsheba and Uriah. And yet he lost something of that in later life, I'm afraid. He didn't maintain that intensity of humility, just as all men come down very small before God at some point in their lives, but life goes on, and we have a strong tendency to move away from that, to go back to form rather than content, to the external, to the religious rather than the spiritual. And so Solomon builds this great big brass altar, bronze altar, which is about four times bigger than the altar that there was in the tabernacle, with 10 lavers for washing the sacrifices, rather than just the one laver that there was, all because, quite clearly, he intended to offer loads of sacrifices, and he does this when he dedicates the temple, but this was not what God wanted. He says this many times in the prophets, that he doesn't want sacrifice, especially rivers of blood pouring from thousands of animals. And yet, okay, this is what they wanted to do, and he sort of goes along with it. The dedication of this temple, verse 3, was in the seventh month, which was the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Tents, and God had said, I prefer to live in a tent. I don't want bricks and mortar. I prefer to live in a tent. And the point of the Feast of Tabernacles was that the people lived in tents to remind themselves of how they came out of Egypt. And yet at that very time, they dedicate this brick and mortar, as it were, building. So they were really out of step with God's intentions here. Likewise, in the ark, verse 10, there was nothing in the ark apart from the two tables of the covenant. So therefore, the golden pot that had the manna, Aaron's rod that budded, both of them symbols of the covenant, symbols of the resurrection of the body in the last day, these weren't there. They'd presumably been lost. And they weren't there. Somehow the whole meaning of the intended meaning of the ark and the glory of God over it was to some degree lost, therefore. But still, God sends the Ark of Glory, the Cloud of Glory, over the Ark and indwells this temple. Although, as we said, the priests couldn't actually stand by reason of the glory. As if God was saying, I don't actually want all this stuff anyway, but... Well, this is the God with whom we have to do, the God who works with you. The God who, in a sense, will accept what man offers him. Now, this is not to say that it doesn't matter how we live, that we can just be minimalists and think, oh yeah, well, God will accept it. No, absolutely not. The fact that in reality, God often does, as you see here, that doesn't mean that we should therefore think that, oh yeah, well, anything will do. Not at all. In fact, for me, when I realise this, that God actually so often, as in these cases, does accept what the way man wants to go, although it is not his ideal way, it actually inspires me to not be a minimalist at all, but to rise up and give him all, give him what he really wants, because I see that so often people are minimalists and God is sort of given whatever man wants to spare for him, rather than realizing that all that we have is his and of his own have we given him.